Hello, my name is Arnold Schwarzenegger. I would like to tell you all about what we do on Christmas Day. First, we have Christmas dinner. Then we open presents.
Look!
That is very nice.
And then we play Christmas songs.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Open fire! Get to the chopper! Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
And I am merely Keith.
Oh.
You're never merely Keith.
I am on my own, bereft, lost, flapping in the wind.
He's like a partridge in a pear tree.
Put it away, then.
Anyway, without further ado, muscle-bound ex-governors of California besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo-hoo! Doctor Who. To be owned. Nearly 9 years in the making, we finally have a date for Murray Jonathan Gold's music to hit CD and streaming for Peter Duggan Capaldi's final season, Doctor Who Series 10 from 2017. Included on the two-disc set will be music for the Christmas specials, The Return of Doctor Mysterio, and Twice Upon a Time, plus everything in between. It will be out in mere days, the 12th of December, just in time for Christmas, as at a price of $14.99. Hint, 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 hint. More than that, lovers of fishy wonder will rejoice as there's a second Hooniverse musical released this December, with the War Between the Land and the Sea soundtrack also getting a release from Silver Screen Records. The music for this spin-off is flowing from Who newbie composer Lorne Bailiff.
Lorne Balfe.
You may know his work for such films as Megamind, Terminator Genesis, The Lego Batman Movie, Ghost in the Shell, Mission Impossible, Fallout, Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, Argyle, Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul, and even Gillen's film Not Another Happy Ending. Mm-hmm. Right, which version of Ghost in the Shell?
This is the Scarlett Johansson one.
Yeah. Streaming and download versions of the album will be released on the 5th of December, plus a physical CD released will not arrive until sometime next year.
Well, he's not exactly a newbie. It looks like he's been quite a track record.
Yeah.
Newbie to Doctor Who, but yeah.
Well, yeah.
He's a big name composer. All the stuff he's done, but he's slumming it in a Doctor Who spin-off now. He's also, I think, from Inverness, which is maybe why Gillen asked him to do her film.
Could be.
Inverness.
Yeah. Game of Thrones prequel gets seconds. Ahead of the 18th of January debut, HBO have announced that their new Game of Thrones prequel series, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, has already been granted a second season. This series is based on the Tale of Dunk and Egg books by one-time writer George R.R. Martin. The 6 episodes of the first season will go out weekly until the 22nd of February.
I thought the prequel to Game of Thrones was House of the Dragon.
That is one prequel. This is another prequel.
Another one.
There's already talk of at least a third prequel. Well, there's a sequel, isn't there, with... I don't know.
Don't write a decent version of the last book, but we'll write loads of prequels.
Yeah, yeah, sort of, they're trying to milk as much out of it as, you know, possible, it seems. So. Yeah.
It depends how much diminishing returns they're getting.
So House of Dragon has got two more seasons in it. Two have gone out so far.
Yeah.
The third is coming up. The fourth has already been greenlit and will be the final one.
Because all those books are out.
Yes.
So they know how it's going to end.
They've had to interpolate a bit because I don't think it's fully fleshed out in the original
format.
I'm quite sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Doctor Who. Oh, more vinyl fun.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Frisbees.
Fans of silver wetsuits have a new treat in store. Demon Records are set to release a new triple LP soundtrack set of Patrick George Troughton's 1968 Doctor Who story, The Wheel in Space. As with all of these releases, these are the original off-air recordings of the full soundtracks, plus, in this case, linking narration by Wendy Padbury. Padbury played companion Zoe Herriot, and this is her first story.
Ooh.
Of the six parts, only two exist with the original video, and abridged animation of the first episode exists, but we are still awaiting a full animated reconstruction. Yes, that's one for the animators.
Yep.
Yeah.
This vinyl release is set for release on the 16th of February, though you can already obtain it on CD and via other digital means.
Yes, it's effectively a republished version, but it's on LP this time.
So I wonder when the animated version of Wheel in Space will be done.
That's a question.
Yeah.
That first episode they did, or abridged, was really good. Yeah, the good animation quality in it.
Anyway.
So, any addendums?
I have an addendum.
I have an addendum.
Only one addendum, I'm afraid, but I have an addendum. I have mentioned this before many moons ago.
Okay.
But it is now finally out.
Right.
The Art of Time Travel.
Oh, yes.
By Peter McKinstry. I think I may have pronounced that wrong. I do apologise. It's been released via Penguin, and it's about 30 quid, but it's a nice, lush, coffee table, hardback book edition, all ready for Christmas. Hint, hint, hint.
Indeed, it's on my wish list as well.
I was going to say, I think it's on your wish list.
It is on my wish list, yeah. Yeah, it looks good. I've not seen inside it, clearly, but from the few shots I've seen.
I used to haunt Mr. McKinstry's webpage.
Oh, okay.
Because he had a website that various bits and pieces were up on. And, yeah, the artwork from that was glorious.
Mm.
I think he did the art for the first couple of seasons up until Matt Smith's first, I think. I'm not sure if he's done any more since then.
Okay. So the very early stuff with Eccleston.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that was Brian Hitch, was it?
I think it was Brian Hitch.
Transformers artist.
Also, Mr. McKinstry had a hand in a few of those.
Oh, he was involved back then as well.
Yeah.
He?
Okay. He wasn't every single one, but as I said, he was tapped for a couple of those.
Yeah. And not really an addendum, but I was in Churchill Square in Brighton today where they have a Lego store.
Oh, yes.
And the Enterprise D is in the window there.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though I said I'd wait until I saw a fully constructed model of it, my resolve is weakening. So.
if you want to go down to Brighton, you can see it.
You've got to hurry because the Shuttle Pod 15 is a limited edition freebie.
Yeah, it fits inside of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, if you get the Enterprise D now, you get the, with, I think...
Ensign Row. Yes.
Mm. Okay. Not to scale.
It's quite
a bit bigger than it should be compared to the Enterprise, but it does look quite good, though.
I'm tempted for the Shuttle Pod, but...
Yeah.
I think the D is something like 300 quid.
350.
Yeah.
It's not bad for a Lego set.
It's not bad for a Lego set, but it does sort of price it out of my range by a couple of noughts.
It's not a small leg created.
No.
And to be honest, you build it yourself, but if you actually bought a model that's scale... Yeah, even if it was just kind of like 3D printed, it still would cost you probably £100, if not more.
I'm not poo-pooing. Oh, yeah, I understand. It's got too many noughts for me.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I've seen reviews of it on my YouTube. £350 is a rather high range for a Lego kit. But bearing in mind it's 3,600 pieces.
Yeah.
You get 30 bags of bricks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I paid more than that for the Death Star.
Yeah.
Death Star, that's 400, was it? I can't remember.
I was going to say, you could probably work it out per brick then.
Well, pretty much, yeah.
It's probably cheaper per brick than the smaller sets. So.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. You get 9 minifigures.
Yeah.
Including
Bridge Crew.
Yes. Oh, and Guinan.
Yeah.
And Weasley Crusher as well. Plus Spot the Cat as well.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Do you get Tasha Yar?
No, you don't have to, unfortunately.
So you can't prove you're fully functional.
But you do get Will Riker with his trombone.
Yes, I saw that in the wind shop window.
There are kids buying this.
He's got a big trombone.
He has.
I am a member of the Lego Insiders Club, so if I was to order the Enterprise D, I would get the Type 15 shuttlecraft with it.
Any further addendums?
Nope.
Here endeth the news. Oh. So, dear listeners, as the nights have been drawing in, we decided to cuddle up on our respective couches with a classic Doctor Who
classic
animation story in colour. Patrick William Hartnell's The Savages.
Pause for music.
Don't remember any of this one.
I've never seen it before.
Neither have I.
I would have been upon the planet.
Yeah, snap.
But I could possibly have been asleep in my cot at the time.
1966. Yeah. May to June. Yeah.
I have seen the telly snaps version in a marathon watch everything that exists. Yeah. But I hadn't seen, and I don't mind this animation, I'll be honest.
Okay, it's a bit cruder compared to some of the earlier ones, oddly. Compositing isn't as good, but, you know.
Better than some.
Particularly in the caves, it should be darker, should be more contrast. But
a little bit of an artistic license. Yeah.
So I have feelings on this, but would anyone else like to?
Well, should we give the basic premise? So we've got the Doctor, first Doctor, of course, Stephen,
and Dodo.
And they land on a planet. They're almost accosted by savages, but get saved by
the elders.
The elders. This advanced race.
Sophisticated guards.
Yes, in their high-tech city.
And for once, the Doctor seems to know where they are and meant to go there.
Yeah, he wanted to scope them out to see what they're all about.
Yes.
And they knew about the Doctor.
Yeah. They did.
They know who he is, but they refer to him as a traveller from afar.
They've apparently been tracking him through space and time.
Because we're quite far into the future, perhaps. The last quarter, I think it was mentioned. We're quite a way into the future.
Well, that's what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have the old morality tale. We've got the savages who are really the good guys and the evil people in the city who are preying upon the savages.
It is, to a certain extent, to my mind, a variation.
Time machine.
On the time machine, H.G. Wells' time machine.
Yeah. Oh, the Eloy and the Morlocks.
Yeah. Mm. Less about the eating of the flesh, more the sort of eating of their spirit.
Oh, yeah, taking their life force, yes.
Mm. Yeah.
With that bit, particularly the way it was, we got the animation version. I did find that resonance of Tanners of Wang Chieng. And I don't know what the original cubicle was, but the cubicle they used for him to sit in the animation was slightly reminiscent of the cubicle Wang Chieng would sit in for the life essence.
Yeah. Now, the opening scenes, I mean, you see the Doctor walking around with his, what's it called, resonating vibrator.
Yeah, that's right.
We never know what it's used for, but he seemed to be cackling a lot.
It was resonating and vibrating.
It was vibrating.
Doctor and his vibrator.
And I so wanted to slap Stephen as she's wandering round trying to find out what's going on. And Stephen's going, well, I'm sure that we'll find out if we stick with them. No, Dodo's right. You're only going to get the authorised tour.
Always go behind the scenes.
That's it. Distract them.
Which she does fairly quickly.
She does, This one's Stephen's last story.
It is.
And I have theories about that, but we'll get that to that later.
Oh. Okay.
I quite enjoyed this one. I didn't find it horrendous. I quite enjoyed it. If this was on a modern series, it'd be the one in the middle that it wasn't awful, but it wasn't brilliant.
It's
nondescript. It's got some interesting parts to it, but it's not horrendously offensive.
No, a bit derivative.
Yeah, a bit derivative. Well, I'm not sure it was derivative because it came before everything else. that's made it before derivative kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of Whodiverse.
Okay. The scene where Dodo's wandering around the tunnel, And one of the savages is being released after having his life force drained completely.
Yeah, left to wander out, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, he's just staggering towards her. I mean, I was just waiting for him to say, "Itch!"
Cue scream. Yeah. My problem with this is I don't know what happened on our viewing system, but I only caught the pictorial one.
Click the button. And
I just clicked the thing and started trying. And I got to admit, I fell asleep during the first episode.
You would.
It didn't rate very highly on my...
No, the telesnaps are never the best way to watch these things, unfortunately.
Now, the animations, it's a very basic animation, but it's not as offensive as some of the animations they've done.
Well, going back to what you were saying, we're talking about... Sorry,
I got a cough there.
Going back to telesnaps, I always remember, I'll never live this down, I think we were around here watching, was it the telesnaps version of The Highlanders? And I think I dozed off during that.
So you've got these omnipotent living in their caged city.
The gilded cage.
And they're the best artists, the best scientists, the God knows what.
All five of them.
And you've got the savages who aren't really savages, really. They're living in the wasteland. And every now and then they go and zap one of them with a ray gun, walk them into the complex, and they drain their lives to about three quarters of their life force, let them go, they build up their strength again. And then, like cattle, they're basically using them like cattle. One of the things I found interesting with this, and I think you've got to remember when these were written, a lot of these were written very, very close to after the Second World War.
Yeah, sort of 20 odd years later.
Yeah, but it's still in the zeitgeist of the mindset.
These writers probably would have fought in the war.
Yeah, and there are that overtones of eugenics and that kind of stuff coming through. But the other thing I've felt with this one is there's also a play between science and religion. Because you had the ones in the Citadel with like science. We're scientists. You're scientists. We're science. The savages have a beautiful tree of life and everything. And they're like, our religion will get us through. And it wasn't overly, but they were much more religious. Yeah. They were like, by the power of faith. Not didn't say what one or anything.
They're a bit apathetic, really. But that makes sense because they were all drained and beaten down.
Having said that, I can't remember their names, but you got the two people that were showing Stephen and Dodo.
Oh, yes.
They know as far as their piece of rope goes.
Yeah.
They, in their own sense, are downbeaten and follow rota and will not step outside their lines.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they've only got so much amount of rope before they're hung.
And I thought it was quite telling because when the guards said, "Come with me," and one of them said, "Oh, we'll be fine because we are free here."
Yeah.
But it was said in that way of like question mark.
Well, yeah. In speech marks. Yeah, very much so.
You got that feeling that, we're okay because we're all free. We'll be fine. We're okay, aren't we? Yeah.
They're fully aware of, they're living in a dictatorship, but they're complicit by their silence. They don't object to it.
No, like I said, they know as far as they can push their rope and they won't go. We're not allowed down there, so we're not going down there.
Or else they could end up on the table.
Well, yes, but the implication was they'd never done it to one of their own before.
No. Mm. That's what's such a big thing about draining the doctor.
Yes.
Oh, good grief.
And I have to say props to...
guy who played Jenno.
The actor who played Jenno. Because he didn't quite, but you could definitely tell he was... Certainly through the voice acting, which was on the pictures, he was channeling Hartnell.
He was impersonating Hartnell.
Yes, there was didn't quite have the voice there, but certainly the mannerisms of the voice.
In his own voice, he was getting the expressions.
As I said, the best way to describe it is the mannerisms of the voice.
I mean, it seems like the two personalities, they were vying for place.
Dodo spills the beans. The Doctor thinks this is terrible. They all go off to see savages. Doctor gets kidnapped and he ends up being drained. But you kind of get the feeling that he saw this coming because it's almost like he's deliberately left his personality in that essence rather than just... I mean, we know then there was no such thing as regenerative energy because he hadn't had to regenerate. But it's up until that point...
We hadn't seen him regenerate.
The writers hadn't invented it at that point, despite what they've decided now.
Too busy inventing vibrators.
Yeah.
So resonating ones.
It's almost like he's... essence.
Indeed.
Yeah. More than anything else, which is why I think and I think he knew his personality would come through with that.
It's interesting to say, was it because they just poured it into the one person, or was it because he was a Gallifreyan and not part of their race?
I take it the Doctor was just so powerful in his mental abilities or whatever.
Being alien as well.
Yeah.
Yes. It's quite interesting because I think it was that third episode where, at first when I was watching the animations, I wondered, was Hartnell even in it? Was it just a body double? But no, he was
definitely in it.
He was in it, but he didn't say a word for that entire episode.
The telly snaps, you could definitely tell it was him.
Right.
But he
wasn't speaking,
responding or acting.
Because this was getting close towards...
Yeah.
I was towards the end of season three, so he only had two or three stories left, I suppose, at most point.
I was just wondering, was this like Toymaker, another way we could change the lead actor?
I don't think they were doing, well, maybe, but the way I think they sold to him was just give him a bit of a break. He was still there, still being paid, but he didn't have to learn any lines.
That could be almost a holiday.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing, when this overseer adopts... The Doctor's energy becomes almost an unconscious turncoat and overthrows everything.
Yes.
And as you say, ultimately you end up with the savages breaking in and everyone going, breaking everything in the...
Destroying their one lab.
They're destroying their one lab, which contains all this life essence. That doesn't destroy the knowledge of how it's all made.
Maybe it's forgotten knowledge. Jeno does get a very bad attack of conscience, thanks to the Doctor.
Oh, yes. They make a big thing about he's inherited the Doctor's conscience, which is interesting because he didn't really have one, the unearthly child.
No.
He's clearly gained one a lot.
This is what hanging out with humans does.
Yeah.
Gives you a conscience. There's an element of this one of, like, not quite the end of The Deadly Assassin, as in, right, we've got to get rid of the assistant, we'll marry her off in this case. So Keith.
No, but that is the theory, as I mentioned to fake Keith, is usually when you get rid of a character, they'll fall in love with someone they've fall in love with someone in episode 6 that they've spoken to once in episode 1. Now, I think this was a deliberate ploy on the Doctor.
Okay.
Oh, right.
To get rid of Stephen.
To get rid of Stephen. Well, he'd clocked...
Marry him off to Janet.
But no, he'd clocked that Stephen was an unstable split personality.
Oh, okay.
Because certainly in Galaxy 4...
We
have 1 minute he's being the tough hero, heroic, and next he's being locked into the airlock and pleading not to be... Because Peter Purvis said he was actually reciting Barbara's lines.
Yeah.
So
Barbara was not that weak either, frankly.
No, but there is a definite split personality going on there.
I think
he clocked this and thought, right, we've got to get rid of this one as soon as possible, and volunteered him to rule at the first opportunity.
I think he's like Clara, he's got split across time. So Morton Deal is actually Stephen as well.
I see.
Or they just become Blue Peter presenters.
The character of Stephen is a little bit kind of like, you know, 1 minute he's the hero and the next minute he's like, well, I'm not sure we should go down there.
He was meant to be a replacement for Ian, wasn't he?
I think so. No. Yeah. But like I said, he did...
Ended up taking on Barbara more.
Yeah, according to Peter Purvis, he ended up with a lot of rewritten Barbara lines.
Yes.
So what would happen if he'd been menaced with a plunger?
Oh, I don't want to know that.
The biggest thing that hit me was the talons of Wang Chien, that they reuse that essence.
Yes, I can't imagine that was deliberately referencing back to here. It's just a very common trope.
Yeah, it's the life essence.
It's vampirism, basically.
I think that's the only two times when we've actually seen it being in terms of drawing it from other humans. You've had the vampire episodes and that, but into a machine that's separate.
Maybe say Mordred Undead is a similar sort of concept with his regenerations rather than life force.
I don't think it's a deliberate homage. I think it's just sort of parallel.
I think so. I don't know if the Doctor came in pre-warned in some way, but he immediately jumps to the conclusion when he sees the savages that their life force has been drained. That guy who'd collapsed outside.
Yeah.
It could be any number of things that made him collapse. But what makes him think his life force has been drained?
He also knew the exact medication to give him.
It does make me wonder the fact that the Doctor went there specifically, that if this isn't the start of the Doctor being aware sometimes that the TARDIS takes him where he needs to go, not where he wants to go. or if the Doctor had a suspicion of what had gone on with, because he obviously knew this society.
Yeah.
If he got a suspicion of how it may evolve and just wanted to check it out. And it kind of like almost confirmed his suspicions rather than him looking for those suspicions.
Got to wonder if he'd visited before, which is how they knew of him.
It's a possibility.
It's also he will visit in the future.
It's also the fact that, even though we had, certainly to begin with, a ruthless, self-serving, self-centred Doctor, at some point in time when he was still at Gallifrey, he managed to organise and get together and have the miniscopes banned.
Oh, yes.
So this could be an aspect of that version could of be. The Doctor. He knows of the society. He wants to visit the society. He's heard a few rumours about the society.
Calculating Doctor. We see a bit more with Troughton occasionally.
Yeah.
And obviously with Seventh Doctor, which is way later.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't. We would write this retrospectively now, given this is three episodes of, or three stories away from his regeneration, that this is the lead up to why he lost his energy strength to regenerate.
It could be the triggering.
The triggering. It's close to the end of regeneration. Yeah. They've taken the life force because they don't give it back. You've got the next episode and then that's it.
Yeah.
He's out. It's kind of like they wouldn't then because they still weren't sure what was going to happen.
They were still writing it.
Still writing it frantically and like, okay, well, we know we're going to get, how do we make this act and the rest of it? But it is interesting that's close. If they were aware, I suspect at this point they might have been aware that he was going to leave and looking at the whole regeneration
idea. I certainly think the upper escalator, if rumour has been believed, certainly, oh God, what was his name? The Canadian.
Sydney Newman
was thinking about or pondering about changing the actor at this time.
The writers wouldn't necessarily know, because otherwise, equivalent now, that the next story would have referenced it and you would know that this is a lead up to an regeneration.
They've already done it, tried to do it once with Celestial Toymaker. Which is before this, but allegedly there was a possibility they could have changed the lead actor because of what happened in Celestial Toymaker.
So
things are rolling on somewhere.
Yeah. Next one is War Machines.
Yeah.
Which they get rid of Dodo halfway through the story.
Yeah.
Which is even worse than the way they treat Stephen here.
Yeah.
That's the end of the season. Then we have the Smugglers and then 10th Planet.
Yeah.
So he's very close
at
to
At least
the end.
With this one, Stephen actually has a defined end. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a quick and sudden end, but as departures from the TARDIS goes, this is actually probably one of the better ones for the character.
Quite a noble self-sacrifice
It's not just going off on holiday or being dumped back in the disco or what have you.
Being unwell, taken off to somebody's cottage and never being seen again.
Yeah, because he can't really go back to his own time stream.
Oh, good grief, no.
So this gives him a whole new
purpose
and a whole new experience and life chance.
Mm.
Thinking how some of the assistants have gone.
Yeah.
It could have been worse, and it has been worse.
So do we think the young guard and Nina are going to get it on now they're all friends?
Boom, chucka, wah, wah.
There was a slight frisson. Yes.
Well, he certainly no longer saw her as a savage, as a commodity. It was starting to make contact with the person. So, that may have changed his future there,
You could do a Henry Higgins and mould her into a little...
The rain in Exelon falls mainly in the city.
Because it's very much... It isn't just treating them as savages, it's treating them as cattle in some extent.
As a commodity.
A food source,
But
I like the play on words because, who are the savages? It's worth watching as the animation.
And it's classic Doctor Who, particularly early Doctor Who, where you've got a micro civilization of a few people.
Five.
The entire planet.
And five savages as well.
They only had small studios and a cheap budget.
You never get the impression there's an entire civilization. They say it's a city, that's true of Time Lash as well, many years later. And not too bad for what it is.
Okay, what did you think of it out there in listening land? If you want to tell us, please write in at
show@staggeringstories.net.
Almost made it all the way round.
I wonder if, as AI becomes cheaper and cheaper, if they will actually do any of these as AI.
I'm sure it's inevitable.
YouTube, there are amateur there is quite a few.
And I wonder how they'll go down. There's the part of me that's the Luddite that sits there and goes, only the original. It's what it should be. There's also a part of me that sits thinking, if you could do Marco Polo in colour and make it look like it's the actual actors, etc., I'm all for it.
There's might a very strong case of what if.
But also, on the flip side, you know, only the original will do. We can't have anything. But on the animation side, I love the little Easter eggs that they put into, like, in a couple of the Second Doctor ones, Roger Delgado's Wanted poster in the background. Yes. I love little things like that.
I think even if they did do AI ones, you've got to keep the original soundtrack.
Oh, good.
I mean, I know I'm ignoring the whole technicalities of ownership of voice rights and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. This is ideal world thinking kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's the audio track is your baseline. That is what they're taking it off of.
Well, that's just being a purist in some respects.
But the visuals, which we no longer have.
But it'd be nice if they could spruce up the audio too with the AI, because these are off-air recordings and they don't sound that great. If we could enhance and
polish them.
Yes, but not alter them beyond making them sound better.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get that too.
Right, dear listeners, I have a 30-second recommendation for you all.
Okay.
So pin back your luggles. Right. Last Friday, myself and a few work colleagues went to see the Australian Pink Floyd at the Brighton Centre.
Okay.
Obviously, by their very nature, they are a tribute band, but they are absolutely amazing. Mm. The music is fantastic. I mean, the music is note for note. The light show is absolutely awe-inspiring. Mm. I mean, this is about the seventh or eighth time I've seen them in concert. So please follow my example. Go and see them. This time around, they played Wish You Were Here in its entirety, plus a lot of Dark Side of the Moon as well. So take my word for it. Go and see them. You'll be blown away.
What are they called again?
The Australian Pink Floyd Show.
The Australian Pink Floyd Show. Okay.
So not Think Floyd.
No.
Pink Floyd.
Think Floyd are a good band as well.
Oh, I've seen Think Floyd,
We just have to ship them out.
I think it's www.ozzyfloyd.com.
Ozzy Floyd.
Obviously, they're touring at the moment.
They're Australian, but they relocated over here about 20-odd years ago, so.
Okay.
Oh, I'm alone. Nobody likes me. I've had no letters or cards. Nobody's talking to me. Whatever shall I do? Oh.
Don't be like Keith. If you want a Christmas card, all you have to do is send your name and postal address to show@staggeringstories and get a shiny one-off Christmas card. They're so good, I bought the company.
We've been watching a film, haven't we, boys and girls?
We have.
We have indeed.
Yeah.
Nearly 40 years ago.
God, have we ever been watching a film. to celebrate the release of the brand new Edgar Wright's Running Man, we have been watching the Arnold Schwarzenegger Running Man.
I'd forgotten Running Man was written by Stephen King.
Yes.
Well, it's based on the book written by Stephen
Richard
King.
Bachman. Yeah, Richard Bachman.
Stephen King. No, Richard Bachman is a pseudonym.
Yes.
Stephen King's.
So six of one, half done.
So did he rearrange his letters and all?
No, it's just a totally different name.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this first aired in 1987.
Indeed.
On the Arnold Schwarzenegger high.
Yeah.
Every 6 months he was releasing a film.
Yes. He was the action hero go-to of the time. And he was a lot younger than...
He was.
He wasn't too bad looking.
Well, somebody said he looked like a sack full of walnuts.
Okay. not sure he is at his acting height, but...
Not
he ever.
It certainly plays to his, how can I put it, reputation, his stereotype?
Yeah. Yes.
Is this before or after I'll Be Back?
This is between the two Terminators.
Yeah.
There are only two Terminators.
This is after the first I'll Be Back.
Yeah.
It's, what was that, 84?
Yeah. 84 and second, was it 90?
This is 87, then 91.
That was now his catchphrase because of that first film.
And it stuck with him.
Yeah. Anyway, so basically what we have is a totalitarian dystopia.
Oh, yes.
And I can't remember the character's name.
B. Ben Richards?
Ben Richards is a police and helicopter pilot who suddenly gets an attack of consciousness and decides to rebel against his orders, is thrown in prison, escaped from prison, recaptured, and thrown into the most popular TV series of that time, mm-hmm. which is Running Man, which gives him the option of, if he makes it back to the end of the course, he gets his freedom.
Well, The Running Man is a very violent game show.
Yes, he is stalked by stalkers.
Mm. By stalkers, and that's what they're actually called.
They're not called that in the books, I don't think. So they're not called that in the new Edgar Wright version.
According to Fake Keith, who isn't here, she's actually read the book.
Oh.
And the remake is closer to the book.
Much closer.
They're not stalkers. Anyone could have a pop at the person who's trying to get out.
In this version, it's almost like he's in an arena.
Yeah.
It's a very big arena.
Yeah.
It's a very controlled environment.
It is something along the lines of Escape from New York. The whole area is cordoned off. It's a city block or a couple of city
about
blocks.
400 blocks or something like that.
Of the city. We're not told what city, I don't think.
It's meant to be LA. It's normally LA.
probably is. But when the city it's in isn't important. The fact that they have a games arena there.
Yes, set in 2017.
Yes.
Yes.
We should have done this a few years ago, shouldn't we? Really?
Should have really, yeah.
And it's the Running Man is virtually on loop.
Yeah.
So normally it's prisoners or someone like that that's given an opportunity to go through the game.
It's like Big Brother, wasn't that? The live version of is always on some channel.
Yeah. Some
you could watch them asleep for hours if you wanted to.
Yeah.
It is very definitely the showgirls at the beginning and the music is very, very 80s.
It is excruciatingly 80s.
Yeah, just their leotards.
The fitness routines.
Yes.
The premise is very much bread and circuses. I mean, distract the masses with a violent game show so it takes their minds off. They're living in a totalitarian state. No freedom. As mentioned at the start of the film, there's food riots as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so food is obviously strictly rationed as well. So not a very nice place to live. That's the way they keep the public diverted.
Yeah. Once couple of scenes, we have like the old Hoovervilles. You've got the shanty towns has sprung up.
Yeah. I thought you meant the convention.
No, not Hooverville, but J. Edgar Hoover.
It only had a $27 million budget, which in this day and age of movies.
That's probably a moderate to big budget at the time.
At the time, but at the moment, that would be nothing.
Apparently, it only made 38 in the US.
Yeah.
So maybe internationally it just about made his money back, but it wasn't a great success by the looks of it.
Now, the various stalkers, as I say, each one of them is like gladiators. I mean,
they have a gimmick.
Yeah.
Mm, a gimmick. You've got Buzzsaw, sort of Electro.
Dynamo.
Yeah, Dynamo, that's right. Yeah.
Buzzsaw has chainsaws. Dynamos can throw electricity around for various reasons.
And Captain Freedom is the only one who has any sort of real reluctance to...
Jesse Finn.
He's retired.
Captain Freeman is old school. Looks like it was done before they zhooshed it up and entertained it. So he doesn't really want to wear costumes.
He's... Oh, good grief, no.
Oh, Sub-Zero as well, the first one of the ice skating.
Some real terrible one-liners in this film.
It was the mid to late 80s, so it was quippy one-liners left, right and centre, and God, they really annoyed me by the end.
Yeah.
All right, they were cringe-inducing, I must admit.
They weren't even delivered very well.
No. That's what I mean. No disrespect to him, but Schwarzenegger is not the best actor in the world.
His
best role was probably the first as the Terminator.
Yeah, he's perfect for that.
Yeah, he didn't have to emote, he just said the lines.
Emotionless, monosyllabic.
He got bitter over the years and like Kindergarten Cop and all that. But at this point, he hadn't learned to choose the films that his acting style best fitted.
He was taking things as they came.
But originally, apparently, Christopher Reeves was... Richards.
Interesting. Certainly, Christopher Reeve had a lot more innate charisma than Schwarzenegger was giving to this role in particular.
And certainly, I think Christopher Reeve was a lot better actor. You just have to compare Clark Kent to Superman. When he took the glasses off, he would straighten up.
Mm. Yeah.
But then Christopher Reeves was an actor. Yeah. God bless his socks. But yeah. Schwarzenegger was a bodybuilder who... Yeah. Fell into acting.
Yes. Yeah.
The music is also terribly 80s.
Yes. Oh, Harold Faltermeyer?
Yes. Synths everywhere.
Harold Faltermeyer. Yeah.
I mean, it was good for its time. Yeah. It really was good for its time, but it hasn't worn well.
No.
Oh, that is. No, oh, Harold Faltermeyer. That was. What movie did you do? Beverly Hills Cop.
It's that kind of stuff. It's not like Star Wars that you still listen to and go, that's a modern day classic music kind of thing. This is like, no, please, make it stop.
Trying to be modern.
Yeah. The whole film in general has dated quite badly.
I suppose it has.
But I don't know. We look at it now, and there's some of it's quite prescient. The bits with the where they were doing computer generated, effectively doing AI replacement. Yeah. So that is right as things are now, where you are AI generating real people doing things they didn't do.
I am not denying the content of the thing. Mm. It's very prescient and up to date. It's the way it's presented dated.
Mm, yeah. I mean, it's a fun film. It's interesting. It's the resistance overthrowing the evil tyrants that have taken power, etc. It's very simplistic. I suspect the book is a lot more nuanced.
I think it was a short story, wasn't it?
I think it's longer than that. Mm-hmm. Bigger than novella, but shorter than a full novel.
I mean, there were a couple of sort of famous, well, semi-famous faces in it. I mean, obviously there's a Dweezil Zappa. Yeah, Frank Zappa's son.
Yeah.
And Mick Fleetwood in one of his sober moments.
Mm. Yes.
Yes. Playing potentially himself.
Yeah.
Because he's basically aged up and talking about losing his songs to the government.
That's the impression that you're given, that he's still alive and it's him. It's not.
It's actually him, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did find it interesting. Again, this is one of those ones where you've got the lead showman who's obviously running this. He's not running the government. He's also a puppet of the government to an extent.
He's an autonomous servant to the government.
But when the crowd, they've got a bet on who's going to make the next kill, and they're going, Ben Richard, but no, he's the one we're trying to kill. Yeah. And he's like, how do I have to make this twist so that it's still, I don't lose the audience?
Yeah.
Because he was in that predicament where the audience was starting to go for the bad guy in their faith eyes. Yeah, this criminal. But that's because they'd so indoctrinated. It wasn't the good guys and the bad guys. It was just blood, give us blood, give us murder, give us blood kind of stuff.
Which goes back to the bread and circuses analogy.
Oh. I am slightly concerned about Mr. Richards himself. You know, he's part of the military, the police. He's obviously isn't blinkered to what's going on. Why do we suddenly decide now this is the line that we're not going to cross? That doesn't necessarily...
Has he really got to that point to never injured an innocent person or killed an innocent person?
And I kind of...
Hard to believe.
Yeah, he's never directly... I might be forgiven for reason he personally has never directly injured or hurt, but you've got to have known what was going on.
You've got to turn a blind eye to it.
And I think it would have made more sense if his brother had been taken away by the authority first.
Yeah.
I know that's the whole reason why he ends up meeting the girl in the house. But if that had been the first thing that happened, then you had the helicopter. That would make more sense in that, hang on, my own family's now been affected. Yep. That kind of like, it's all right until it touches me kind of scenario.
Right. Quantum leaping forward quite a few years.
we're not doing that one.
Wrong program.
Wrong program. Anyway.
I'm reminded of the Christopher Eccleston Doctor Who episode with the violent game shows, the android and... what's it called?
Bad Wolf. Long Game.
Long Game. The one that's set on the station.
That was the news. Right. Yeah, corrupt news. Yeah, Long Game. Bad Wolf was the game station.
With the more violent version of the Weakest Link.
But they put stars in your eyes and that kind of
stuff. And Zuzani and Trini.
Yes. Yeah, it is very much like that. Avengers of Aros, which, again, is a very similar concept.
Mm. Yes.
But must be a couple of years before this. Mm. But obviously is the book was 82 for this. So I don't know if they were influenced. But again, it's taking TV and giving us reality TV for the masses. It's interesting how ahead of its time both of those were.
Mm. Yeah.
This started with the original Big Brother story, the Year of the Sex Olympics.
True.
Which was basically about a bunch of people on an island with a murderer, and the whole thing is continuously streamed live because Big Brother's always watching you. Mm. And it was like society had got to the point where voyeurism of had no bounds.
To say Nigel Neal was the first one to come up with this stuff.
Well, he probably wasn't the first one, but that was the main leader of that kind of idea. So you had the Big Brother from 1984, and then you had this idea of this 24-hour live reactive TV playing out. And then because it wasn't popular, they added something else, and eventually they put a murderer. Oh, no, we're not cutting it because look at the ratings.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing that's become prevalent again. But you've seen the modern version.
Oh, yes. How does it compare?
The modern version,
Without giving the game away, because obviously I haven't and other people haven't.
From what I gather from people talking about this version, how it differs, the new version is much more authentic to the original book, follows it much more closely. He isn't a cop in it. He is a family man who's got a daughter who's sick, needs money for medicine, so he goes into the running man.
Enters the game show.
To win the ultimate prize, and he is running around the country as a whole, potentially. Every day you last, your family gets money.
I take it the contestants aren't predicted to make it all the way through to the end.
No. And there's there's a lot of faking of footage and stuff like that to make him out to be a bad guy when he isn't. And so similar in that regard. I think it's far superior to the 87 Schwarzenegger version.
Yeah.
I've only seen clips of the new one.
Yeah.
But it seems more like in the style of Blade Runner, that more kind of like fairly modernish clothes, but darker and slightly grungy. And I found that interesting. We went through this phase of like 1980s, and you had this, you had the one where you hit 21, Logan's Run, kind of stuff. Yeah. And they're very shiny.
Yeah.
Everyone's in leotards and no one's in what I would call normal clothes. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the audience, but that's almost 1950s. But it's all very of that moment in time, but it's almost like a false perception of it.
Even the audience they weren't jumpsuits, but they were very refined. It was the upper class echelons of the audience that was watching it rather than... so you did have a group betting outside, but they were the trash.
They were.
Who looked more like normal people.
Yeah.
In both versions, you've got the audience in the studio. I quite like the audience in the 87 one, because they are all old women, apparently.
Yes.
Really foul-mouthed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean... In a way, it's comparable to, in the 1970s.
The old wrestling.
Wrestling. Yeah. You get the old biddies come up and remonstrate with the wrestlers.
Beating the wrestler with their umbrella.
That's it,
I don't know if it's in the book, but in the new one of the main characters is called Amelia Williams. Obviously, Amy Pond. And also one of the characters is played by Sandra Dickinson in the new film. So I don't know if that's Edgar Wright's fandoms showing through there, or if it's only the character name may have come from the book. I don't know.
To ask Karen.
Yeah.
So I want to go and see the new one.
Yeah, so I definitely want to
see. Yeah.
Particularly, it's a very good ending. The ending you sort of expect, based on the old film. But it doesn't have the cheesy one-liners like... Here is Sub-Zero, now plain zero. That's what I'm going to burn. I don't know. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And he had to split or whatever it was for any chainsaw the guy.
Pithy online. Dear.
It was the way of the world.
It was the way of the world. Right? I think I've seen this before and it didn't grate on me as much as it does now.
I know.
Well, given the benefit of 2020 rose-tinted glasses...
Yeah, it's not just... Obviously, James Bond of the era, particularly Roger Moore.
Yeah.
A lot of quips. Kill somebody, have a quip about it.
Yeah.
It's the way it was, but...
I think it's also the plethora of them. Yeah, you don't mind the odd quip, but this is like... Okay, what ones are you going to come up with now?
They're pretty lame and they're not very well delivered. I'll be back. Only in a rerun. Now, that one's not too bad.
So if any of you have watched The Running Man 1987 version, tell us what you think, if you agree with us, or if you loved all those one-liners and the gold run suit. And
some people do.
Watch it every year as a feel-good thing. Send us your comments at show@staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo.
Oh, oh, speaking of something, well, it's not running at the moment.
Oh. No, Smitey.
After three.
Hello, Head of Pertwee.
Hello, Handles. Hello, Inky Dinky.
Rinky. Minky.
Rinky McSquirtalot.
Graham.
Dave Zilla the Mighty.
Terence.
Various Nebulas.
Dangerous Churchill. Nazi Spock. The Goats.
With one eye bigger than the other.
Evil Cat.
Seriously, listeners, if we named everything in here, it would take longer than the podcast.
We must write them all down sometimes so we never forget any of them.
There's gnomes, there's Daleks, there's Funko Pops, there's
Uncle Tom Cobbly and all.
Oh, good grief.
Is it Flambeau there? The gonk kind of goes Flambeau.
Yep. Flam, yes.
Oh, well.
Dear listeners, we have feedback.
Yay, thank you. Oh.
Who's it from, Jean?
We have a correspondence from Elizabeth.
Yay.
Ooh. Greetings, staggerers. It was good fun listening to your last episode while driving up to visit my family for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes.
I remember going to see Hitchhiker's Movie with my mum at the... You spelt mum right wrong. You spelt it with an O and it should have a U in it.
Mum.
She's American, it's fine.
Oh, okay, I'll forgive her. I know. At the cinema, because she was the one who introduced my sister and me to the TV series.
Ah, yes.
As we watched the movie, she kept asking me, are you sure this is the same story? I agree with you. The updated portrayal of Trillian is one of the best parts. Also, Bill Nye makes a good, slightly buffled Slarty Bartfast.
Yeah.
I can say Slarty Bartfast. Also at the time, the new Zaphod brought up lots of comparisons to George W. Bush.
Yeah.
True or not, it's positively quaint now. I really like the soundtrack and still have it on CD somewhere.
Me too.
Maybe time to dig it out and then try to find my CD player.
I've got a rip of mine.
I would love a Christmas card.
Yeah.
And shall send you one in return.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that was our only bit of feedback.
So, dear listeners, if you want to send us feedback, please, you can do so at our address, which is show@staggeringstories.net.
It's Christmas. Let us know that you still love us.
Remember, give us that, don't be like me.
Give us that warm, fuzzy feeling of just saying, hello, happy Yule, or whatever you like to call it. We don't mind. Season's greetings will be fine.
Post us a Yule log.
Chocolate preferably.
I call it overdraft.
Yes.
Lead us out crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Thank God.
But never fear, in the next one there'll be more of the same.
The Christmas episode.
Oh, yes.
Ding, 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 ding.
More
ding,
fun, frivolity and jollity. More ding, news ding, and reviews. Ding, more who old and new. So until that...
Ah, oh, for running man.
Walkchus.
Rumbuctious.
Randy.
Revolutionary.
Ravenous.
Ripe.
Rollicking.
Rogery.
Revelation comes...
Running.
Rambling. Yeah. Ruinously towards us. This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
It is not our abilities that show what we truly are. It's our choices.
You have been listening to Staggering Stories Podcast Series 1, number 486, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Gene Ridler and Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
And most of them, they don't know much at all. They're the salespeople, they don't understand the technology, really.
Oh. It's when we used to go and buy the desktop computers with your world. PC World, your little photograph behind this counter. Do not serve this man unless you want to be humiliated.
Get to the chopper!
Pink as a girl's colour.
Of the six episodes, only two exist with the original audio.
Video.
Oh, yeah. When did I say audio? I'll say it again. An abridged animation of the first episode. No.
Once you go, that's it.
Yeah. Right. So what should we tackle first?
Yeah, I think they were pretty bad as each other in one way or another, so...
I wouldn't be too quick to dismiss the Savages.
I think the problem was I watched the...
Save it for the podcast.
Okay. Sod you.
Shall we watch the Savages, do the Savages first?
Yeah. Do you know what?
Mm.
Wee-wee time!
Pardon me.
First of December already.
Yeah.
How's that possible?
Where has 2025 gone?
Yeah, I don't know. Where's the whole 21st century gone? More than a quarter of the way through it already. So. Mm-hmm. It seemed like only a few years ago since we were at your flats with
the millennium. Yes. Yeah.
Have you been like Keith? Don't be like Keith. If you want us to send you a Christmas card.
Yep, why not?
Right, next time.
Indeed.
The battle between the Len and the Utuba flips.
That's true, yes.
And Stranger Things.
Yes, we've got Stranger Things back as well.
We've got the first four.